Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of six different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit arrcled.com.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
Today's cool fact of the day is that there's a new discovery that yoga can increase heart rate variability because it stimulates your vagus nerve, which is the big boss of your inner nerve center. In fact, there's a recent podcast about polyvagal theory if you really, really want to dig in on that. Your nervous system can respond to mechanical stimulation. So when you're doing, say, the warrior pose and breathing deep, you're rousing your vagus nerve, which sends signals to your heart to optimize the spacing between your heartbeat or the heart rate variability, which is kind of cool. So that's one of those things that no one ever knew about yoga, except the people who invented yoga, who probably sensed it was doing something good to the nervous system.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat cold tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500.
Today's guest is a friend and a second-time guest on Bulletproof Radio. He's a retired Navy SEAL commander with 20 years of active and reserve duty under his belt. None other than Mark Devine, who has probably the coolest name of anyone I've ever seen. Mark is the CEO of SEALFIT.com, a multi-black belt martial artist, a hand-to-hand combat expert, and this is why the cool fact of the day was so cool. He's a certified Ashtanga yoga teacher, and he created something called the Unbeatable Warrior Yoga Program. He's a New York Times bestselling author, and he's on the show to talk about his latest book called Kokoro Yoga, Maximize Your Human Potential and Develop the Spirit of a Warrior, the SEAL Fit Way. Mark, that is one hell of a long title for a book.
That's the Welcome subtitle. To the show. That's the subtitle, yeah. Great to see you, Dave. Thank you for having me on your podcast. Oh, by the way, when I stimulate my vagus nerve, it just makes me want to gamble. So I don't know how that relates to yoga, but...
Does it really? You get like the urge to go play poker when you stimulate your vagus nerve?
I want to go play poker. So I'm just
so
it is the vagus nerve, after all.
How do you stimulate... Sorry, I missed that entirely. Vagus, there we go.
Come on.
I can't believe I missed that. See, I'm just a dork.
You've
I was sort of looking at...
too much.
All right, so before we started recording the show, for everyone listening, my team just yelled at me enough and said, Dave, you have to get on Snapchat And I said, guys, do I really have to take my pants off at work? And apparently it's used in a different way now. So I just started Snapchatting. It's Dave Asprey all run together. So if you want to follow me on Snapchat, I did Snapchat when Skype was hiccuping and whatever. But Mark, are you going to Snapchat? Come on.
You know what? I'm not going to Snapchat. No.
Ah, all right. I could see that.
I probably Snapchat, should, but I can't keep up with all the stuff.
Yeah, you're kicking someone's ass and Snapchatting at the same time. The situational awareness is diminished with Snapchat, I think so.
Exactly.
All right, let's go back to the interview because you totally got me with an incredibly lame pun, and there we go.
There you go.
What is Kokoro? Why do you name the book that?
Kokoro.
Coconut Kokoro.
You know, coconut oil. Oh my God. Kokoro is the way I pronounce it, but it actually is Kokoro. It's a Japanese word, if you hadn't figured that out, and it means heart mind or whole mind. And as you know, in English, there's no one word that captures kind of that essence, right? We have to use two words like heart mind. I started using the word for my seal fit 50-hour crucible experience back in 2008 because what I noticed when people were going through this crucible that they were having like this transformative experience that I could only characterize as dropping in and connecting to their heart and being like really vulnerable and asking for help and requiring help and receiving help from teammates and you know to survive the program, and then at the end having this like wonderful intimate connection that they've never experienced before, but you know, all special operators and many people have been in combat have experienced, right? That kind of experience of loving your teammate so much that you're willing to take a bullet for them. Now, we don't have the Kokoro students take bullets and there's no live rounds or anything, but they were experiencing this, which is unique in our society today, to have something that can trigger that and get people that connected. So, later on, fast forward a little bit, I started training SEALs in this yoga techniques that I had been using personally, and then I wanted to train them because it was very effective at cultivating, you know, mindfulness and focus and, you know, skills that are really good for combat. And I said, well, you know what? I think Kokoro is a great term to use for this yoga too. So you can experience Kokoro through a long-term dedicated practice of yoga, and you can experience Kokoro through the fire of a crucible like Hell Week or our Kokoro camp.
How much yoga do you have to do in order to experience that?
Yeah, 10,000 hours. No, I'm just kidding. You know, to me, yoga can be experienced as little as 5 to 10 minutes a day. It's the consistency of practice. Yoga, you know, a good yoga program, Kokoro yoga is what I call integrated training, and it integrates breathing practice with functional movement. That functional movement can be traditional asana, which most people associate with yoga, but it can also be, you know, CrossFit swinging a kettlebell or fighting type movements. You know, anything where you have to be aware of your body in space and time and connect your breathing with the movement, and then learning how to move with it more of an internal focus as opposed to an external focus. That's the functional movement. So we integrate breath with movement, and some form of mental training to include concentration, visualization, or meditation. So all three of those components exist in every practice session of Kokoro yoga. Those practice sessions can be an hour and a half long, like my traditional Ashtanga practice was, or 5 minutes, like a quick morning routine. You know, wake up, do 3 to 4 minutes of your breathing, do 5 sun salutations, visualize your day, boom, you're out the door. So it's the really consistent practice day in and day out where you're cultivating the inner domain, curating your thoughts and emotions, and really connecting with that warrior spirit. That's where you're going to find Kokoro in your life.
Now, Ashtanga yoga, and if you're listening to this and you're a yogi, it makes great sense, but a lot of people don't know that there even are different schools of yoga or different kinds of things. Ashtanga yoga prescribes a set of kind of recurring poses. You do the same poses in the same order each time.
Right.
And you're describing something pretty different. You're talking about doing other types of movement that isn't the full Ashtanga series.
Correct.
What what made you learn Ashtanga, but then not do Ashtanga?
Well, when I found Ashtanga, it reminded me of my martial arts training, right? Like each series was like a long kata, and you had to memorize them, and you know, you had to have the progressive nature of going through it. So like graduating from the first series in Ashtanga to me was like getting your black belt, and then you do the second series, and that would be like your secondary black belt. That's kind of the way I looked at it. It's very achievement-oriented, and a lot of people approach Ashtanga that way, which is, in my opinion, not a great way to approach yoga training. Many people don't know this, but the Ashtanga yoga was developed by a guy named Sri Pattabhi Joyce, and it was transmitted to him by what we consider to be the father of modern yoga, a guy named Krishnamacharya. Krishnamacharya taught this version of yoga to Pattabhi for the training of young athletes and warriors. So it's a very militant style of yoga, right? It's very militant. It's very challenging. It's aggressive. It's athletic. You know, you stand like at attention all the time. And it's very focused on the physical. But traditional yoga was meant to be about mental, spiritual development, and the physical was really just to prepare you to sit in meditation.
It's funny that you just described it that way. I've practiced a variety of yoga. I was pretty serious at yoga for probably 8-9 years, where I was doing it on a very regular basis. And I would do an Ashtanga class, but I always described it as like militant yoga. Where you do a vinyasa, or I was a fan of the Anusara form for a long time, sure. Where it's a little bit more playful and a little bit more breathing and just energy focused. So you started out, you're a military guy, right? So you were attracted to the more militant form of yoga. And then how long ago did you diverge and go into Kokoro yoga?
Kokoro. Right around 2004. So okay. I noticed a couple things. One was an event that happened. The other was kind of a series of injuries and burnout that I was experiencing. So because you're doing the same set of sequence over and over, it'd be like going into the gym and doing the same CrossFit WOD every single day. You develop dysfunctional movement patterns, and a lot of people get injured in yoga. A lot of people get, in Ashtanga, and a lot of people actually get injured in CrossFit because they come to it with dysfunctional movement patterns that they don't have the sensitivity or the coaching to fix, and they go from zero to hero, and boom, they spring a gasket. Same thing happens in Ashtanga. So I noticed that I was getting injured, and I was getting kind of burned out, and I said, you know, there's got to be a better way. The second thing that happened is I was mobilized, as you mentioned in your introduction, that I was a reserve officer for about half of my Navy SEAL career. So in 2004, you know, it was my time to go to Iraq. And so when I got to Baghdad, there was really no place for me to train. No, there's no gym, you know, so most of the guys at the Joint Spec Ops Task Force that I was over at with the SEALs would just basically run the 3-mile loop around the compound and do PT, you know, just like calisthenics. That wasn't good enough for me. So I found a little place behind, we were at Saddam's palace compound. It was all pockmarked with, you know, with bullet holes and mortar rounds and stuff like this. And I found a little spot near this lake. And I started to do early version of Kokoro yoga. I called it warrior yoga at the time. And the traditional Ashtanga thing wasn't going to work for me. And so I just started experimenting, you know, combining and integrating these different things. And that's really where it started. And what I found was that it was much more effective. You know, I could do a recovery. I could choose. And by this time, Dave, I had enough knowledge of the movement and breathing practices to be able to combine them sensibly. So if I needed to recover, I would choose the poses and the breathing and the visualization that were going to lead to recovery. And that helped me ward off combat stress. And then if I wanted a workout, then I would choose some more aggressive poses to warm up. Then I would actually get a workout in the middle of it, like a CrossFit WOD, body weight only, because I didn't have any tools. And then I'd go into some seated poses and do my concentration training afterwards. So it evolved into be this very modular, practice that, you know, was customizable and personalized, you know, for anyone who, you know, who was to take it on. So that's what I try to convey in the book, that, you know, authentic yoga, as Krishnamacharya taught it, was personal practice meant to be done on your own, meant to be adapted to your stage of life, your goals, the time of day, and you know, only once in a while would you do it in a group setting, and that was like for an exhibition or to go get some skills for, like at a seminar. So that's kind of how I approach it. I rarely go to a studio anymore for yoga unless I'm going to go get some additional training, or I want to tune up, or I want to go check in with a teacher, you know, that I've connected with.
You talk about combat stress and burnout. Tell me more about that. Like, what's that like? What happens, and how does that relate to the rest of us who haven't been in combat?
Well, I mean, PTSD can be experienced. I would say most military members who go to combat experience some form of PTSD. Okay. It's your resiliency before you go in that'll affect how much it impacts your nervous system, and then the resiliency of your ability to bounce back and to recover from that. So like Navy SEALs, you know, we tend to be pretty immune, although we're not entirely immune to combat-related stress because of our training. Our training is so intense. It's, you know, it's very realistic. It's punishing. So when we go to combat, you know, we're like, okay, you know, we've been here before. And so guys tend to, like, do fairly well in that environment. They don't tend to get combat-related stress as much. Having said that, the effect of it is really debilitating because it's not something you're always consciously aware of, but it shows up in your emotions, in anxiety, in a sense of dread. And of course, you've heard about, you know, like waking up in cold sweats and having flashbacks. And all of this, you know, just starts to really whittle away at your confidence, and your nervous system is just completely frayed. You know, what's happened is, let's say you spend a year in a combat zone, or even 6 months, every day your sympathetic nervous system is just getting bombarded, right? And it has no opportunity to calm down. And so your cortisol levels are jacked, everything's jacked, and you get so out of balance that unless you aggressively work to overcome that balance by going in the opposite direction, and so like everybody coming out of the combat zone should go to a monastery for a month, right? And just practice breathing and meditation and some yoga, and they'd probably be fine because this, you know, the parasympathetic would go to work to overcome that imbalance. But instead, they go right back to families that have missed them. There's a lot of stress from them being gone. There's financial stress, right? And it just exacerbates. It's a crushing issue. And a lot of military members have lost their lives and have committed suicide from it. So I'm hoping that Kokoro Yoga, we can do our small part in helping military members and others. It could be anyone in life, because, you know, think about a busy corporate executive. You know, it's almost like, you know, your version of combat going out into the business world every day. Like, it moves so fast and there's so many stressors. But we can use these skills as like an antidote, right? So that every day, if you're doing 10, 20 minutes of Kokoro Yoga, your breathing and movement and mindfulness or concentration training, then it's going to help you ward off. It's like you go through your day with this force field around you, just the stress is just bouncing off you. You become very stable and balanced and just non-attached to those stressors, so they don't affect you as much.
I see what you're saying there, that the CEO stress is different. You get
right.
Like the daily grind where there's always more. And I've never been in combat, but I have veterans working for Bulletproof and certainly friends who have. And there's, I think, something that hangs over your head. You're waiting. Like, you're not actually in combat, so you get a waiting time, but waiting with pressure because you don't know. And then you get intense firefight for some amount of time and then waiting, right? So there's a pressure cooker mentality. And on the business side, it's different in that there's always something to do. Like, no matter how hard you push, it's like running a marathon, but the finish line is never there. No matter how hard you run, there's probably someone next to you. And they might be different people, but they're always running too. And so we tend to grind ourselves down. And there are more than a few CEOs who have PTSD from something in their life. It's different than combat PTSD, but it's the same activation of the brain. I had lots of PTSD from the way I was born. I had the cord wrapped around my neck when I was born.
Good Lord.
And like birth trauma like that will literally, your nervous system believes that everything in the world is a threat because that's the way you're wired. And I've rewired myself that way. I don't have that in my behavior patterns anymore. Like it's lost its charge. But I see, you could spot someone who, like, something triggers them, right? Mm-hmm. And it can be something big or something little. Is it your experience that you can take someone with that kind of, we'll say, non-military PTSD, but trauma-derived nonetheless, whether it's combat trauma or not, is not that relevant. How quickly could Kokoro Yoga help shift someone, CEO or not, out of that reactive, post-traumatic sort of thing into a more functional pattern that's going to improve their happiness?
Great question. It depends upon kind of their receptivity to the training. And so if they've had some prior yoga experience or meditation or even athletic training, then you've got some neurological pathways that are going to be receptive to this. But I would say generally 30 days of training done day to day will have a profound effect. And this is generally the feedback. I get feedback from people who said they've been practicing for 2 weeks or 3 weeks and boom, all of a sudden things start to change for them, right? The way they respond to stress, their worldview, their ability to reframe very quickly something they used to take on as negative stress and have it be boiling with them for hours or even days. They're able to let it go really quickly because they've created kind of a new mental orientation around their relationship to the world and the other people in it, and also the information that they're receiving. It really can be as quick as 30 days. And we just launched a 30-day challenge. I gave it away for free. We had a couple thousand people enroll just because I wanted people to experience this. And it's only like 7 or 8 minutes of training a day, sometimes a little bit longer. And the feedback has been phenomenal. So it can happen fairly quickly. I mean, the brain will rewire itself really quickly. You know that more than anybody. You know, it's always seeking new ways to run the rivulets of information. And the breathing in particular is so intensely, we say in yoga that the breath is the link between the body and mind and then the mind and spirit. And so the breathing exercises are like a whole new way to use your brain, and they just stimulate all sorts of activity, all of it good, right? So when you combine the breathing with the movement with the visualization, magic happens. So it can happen pretty quickly.
I appreciate hearing that. It's hard for some people to do that. I didn't when I first started practicing yoga. It's actually kind of a cool story. I had just met the woman who's now my wife, and we were just getting to know each other, and she hadn't moved to where I lived yet, so we had a long distance relationship. And she said, you should start doing yoga. And I'm like, well, okay, you know, dating a hot woman, all right, I'll do some yoga sort of to just, you know, like, what the heck, sure, maybe next time you see me, I'll be more flexible, it'll be fun. And she gave me this great piece of advice. She said, you know, what I recommend you do is you find the hottest yoga teacher you can possibly find. And I said, okay, I like this advice, but why? And she said, so you'll actually go to yoga. I'm like, okay, I like this. I like this advice. And I like this woman, it turns out. But what effect that had, and just the fact that I had not that much else to do, was that I went to class probably 4 or 5 times a week, which wasn't 7 days a week, but it was enough to really get me immersed in it so that I could experience some of the benefits you're talking about. And eventually you sort of get to the point where you don't feel right if you don't at least do a few poses every day just because your body gets used to it. So I don't know if I felt a difference in 30 days, given I was doing hour-long classes with different forms of yoga at different times of the day. But the recurring thing is something that I've not heard anyone say on Bulletproof Radio before, but I think there's great value to that, like having a practice that happens every day in order to get maximum results. What about on the exercise side of things, though? What do you recommend there outside of the yoga side of things in the book? Just talk about what the exercise program looks like.
Okay, so what I recommend is that your yoga is a complement to a solid functional fitness program. It doesn't replace it. It didn't work for me when I was doing Ashtanga for my fitness program. Like I said earlier, it led to injury and kind of a monostructural exercise, just as if I was a long-distance runner. It's an incomplete fitness. A lot of people use yoga for fitness, and it's looked at as like group exercise in this country. And that's one of the things I want to try to change with this book. So what my routine is, because I also run SEAL Fit, is I do an hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours. I have the time and it's part of my routine, but you know, it doesn't have to be. It could be a half hour to an hour of varied functional fitness that includes several really intense workouts, you know, spaced throughout the week, and then others of lessering degrees of intensity. And also to include some form of weight training, so you have that resistance, because it's phenomenal for growth hormones and testosterone balance, those types of things. So that you have this, you know, and it could look like a really good CrossFit coach who can, you know, build a training plan for you. You've got that. But every time you do a hard physical training session, you balance your system out with some sort of recovery. Kokoro yoga provides that. It doesn't have to be Kokoro yoga. It can also be, you know, just active stretching, some sort of mindfulness, right? It could be rolling out on a foam roller. But the point is you want to have more focus than is common on the post-workout recovery. Kokoro yoga has a lot of that benefit, because now what you've jacked up your nervous system, you know, you've stimulated, you've thrown energy out into the world, you've expended all this energy, and now you want to basically rebalance, reabsorb energy, and recover. And this leads to like progressive building of your fitness skills without, you know, degrading your performance through ruts and burnouts that happen and being forced to take time off, you know, through injury or through, you know, not getting enough sleep because your cortisol level is jacked or something like that. So I would say to summarize, a functional fitness program where you're doing a variety of different training to include weightlifting and high-intensity interval training, you know, some hard, some medium, some long, some short, right? Because variety is the spice of the physical life. And then to balance out all that with a daily practice of anywhere from 5 minutes to 45 minutes to an hour of Kokoro yoga. And that's what I do, and it's turned out to be, you know, at 52 to be a really incredible balance, working out and working in, I call it, and those two together are mutually supportive.
All right, I can put my ankles behind my head, but I can't do the splits. So talk to me about flexibility. I've got some flexibility, but what the hell? Why can't I do splits? So give me the secrets to flexibility.
I can't either.
What?
The point is to be doing it, right? I would look at flexibility as a like a secondary physical benefit, maybe almost a tertiary physical benefit to the movement of yoga, the movement practice of yoga. The primary physical benefit, Dave, and I know you're going to appreciate this, is spinal health. Okay, So we want to flex the spine, twist our spine. And, you know, we're working almost like you would work a paperclip, except your spine isn't going to snap eventually like the paperclip will. It's just going to get healthier. You're going to be keeping the space between the vertebrae open, allowing the blood and the energy to flow through your vertebrae. If your spine is healthy, then your nervous system is going to have greater health, and that will radiate out to the rest of your body. So spinal health leads to great structural physical health. So that's the primary benefit of yoga movement practice. Secondary benefit, I would say, is detoxification, right? So you're helping to detoxify your internal organs by twisting and squeezing them, and also your mind. So you're detoxifying your mind and getting much clearer focus in your mind. Mind-body system, you know, is starting to really fire at a much more efficient manner. The third would be flexibility, both in joint articulation and muscular flexibility. So here's another place where I differ from the traditional yoga community. It doesn't matter if you can put your feet behind your head. What matters is that you have a balanced structure, and that your muscles, that after you tighten your muscles, you lengthen them, and that you're working on your flexibility for your entire life, because a flexible body is a limber body. It's nimble, and it's not going to break or get sick as easily. There is a lot of ego in the yoga community around being able to do certain poses and, you know, always having to do harder and harder poses. It is irrelevant. And even Krishnamacharya would say those are, you know, they're stupid human tricks. And when you're, you know, 50, you don't need to stand on your head for 20 minutes a day. And you don't need to do poses where you twist yourself in the pretzel and put your foot over your head. Those are fun to do when you're young and athletic, and it makes it seem like you're doing some esoteric movement, but they really are irrelevant. You could stick with 10 or maybe, if you're aggressive, 20 basic poses and get all the benefits.
I've always sort of been amused by the idea of a yoga competition.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's like, who are you competing with? Like, to me. It's like yourself, right?
right. That's all ego. That shouldn't exist in the world, right?
I am with you there. It is all ego. And I also agree with you there on putting the ankle behind my head. So what? It is exactly a stupid human trick. And
unless you're in the bedroom, there's no utility value for that.
That's a fair point. I have to work on that, right? There's something though about like continuous improvement, and you get that. Yeah. That's sure. Like core to what you do, core to your program. Where I'm like, all right, today I can do this pose. Tomorrow, you know, I want to do 1 millimeter more. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that's a young person's game, and we're all getting older. No matter how old you are, you get older every day, 24 hours at a time, right?
And
so you're raising. Well, you might get older 36 hours at a time. I don't know, but.
Right.
But what I find is that, you know, I'm in my early 40s, but there's a thing where I want to continuously make my splits better, right? But I also know that my body doesn't really want me to do that. So there's that constant tension, which is also a part of yoga. And I'm interested in doing splits not as a stupid human trick, but just for that okay, like I've shown myself that I'm making progress in the right direction, which is just a physical sign of progress, even though most of the progress is actually more meditative.
Right.
And you write a lot about meditation in the book as well.
Yes.
Talk with our listeners about how you meditate, why part of the warrior's spirit is meditation. Just what's your take on meditation? Because it's a little different than I think most people would expect.
Probably. First, I want to address your last point real quickly. It's okay to have a physical goal in yoga. I don't want to say it's completely irrelevant. It's okay, but just recognize it, that it's a goal, it's something you're working toward, but that the primary benefits really are the internal ones.
Yeah.
And so the internal benefits are, they're not benchmarkable. They are if you hook up one of your funky machines, you know, or, right? That one behind you, that biohack machine. You can track the progress and see what's happening to your brain waves and neural pathways and all that. But from an experience standpoint, subjective experience, right, all we can do is talk about it. In the monasteries, they would track progress by the quality of the conversation, right? Did the aspirant have the insights and, you know, is he present in his conversation? Could the head monk or the guru detect that the mind is wandering or he's in his ego state? And so, you know, it was very hard without a master, so to speak, to determine, hey, am I making progress? So, you know, we recommend like journaling and, feedback from others, as a great way to track your progress. How are people responding to you? Because what I noticed very quickly, people will start responding to you differently because you're showing up different. You're showing up more positive, more authentic, more grounded, more peaceful. You know, you're smiling, your eyes are clear, you're able to have direct, you know, eye contact, deep eye contact with people because you've gotten rid of any fear that may exist in personal relationships. And all of a sudden people are like, wow, what are you eating? Are you doing bulletproof coffee or something like that? You know what I mean? Something's going on. Something's different. So it's hard to track. It's really more, really subjective. And you can just feel your progress as you progress. Meditation. I love this subject. In the West here, just like everyone's conflated yoga to group physical fitness, group, you know, exercise, everyone has also conflated meditation with just sitting with your eyes closed. So if I'm sitting with my eyes closed and watching my breath, I'm meditating. Well, that's true. But the way we teach it is meditation, first of all, authentic meditation has some prerequisites, right? That's why the yogis taught movement and then breath and then concentration before meditation. Because very, very difficult, if not outright impossible, for a busy Westerner who's trained their rational mind to be like a 400-pound deadlift for us. It's very difficult for us to just immediately leap over to a meditative state, which is a deep state of focused presence, where you're focusing that awareness onto a particular subject. And it could be something you're trying to learn, or the yogis would say first prerequisite is to focus on your own patterns, right? That's why we would focus on the chakra or the energy systems and route out dysfunctionality, or what they call knots, you know, knots in the energy systems which are holding you back. And so it required almost a complete reframing of your life, like your birth experience. Meditation in the way that was traditionally taught by the ancient yogis was an effective form to overcome those early childhood anxieties. So that's meditation. Now, what most people practice as meditation is either concentration training, so concentrating on the breath. So we're still focusing on one thing. Box breathing that I teach is a concentration practice. Inhale, hold your breath. Exhale, hold your breath. And so what happens is I'm teaching my brain to concentrate on that one thing, and then whenever it starts running off with something else that is not that one thing, I'm teaching it to notice and to bring it back and to let it go. And so what happens is I'm able to concentrate for much longer periods of time on one thing or a narrow range of things, and I'm also getting very, very clear that when my mind starts to wander off, I notice it much quicker than I used to. And so I can bring my attention back. So it's attention control training. In fact, that's what the SEALs call that, attention control training. So we first start with concentrating to get our mind more precise and able to focus on one thing. Then the second form of meditation that's popular here in the West is mindfulness, you know, and that came from Buddhism. Mindfulness is sort of similar to concentration, except it's really kind of the opposite. It's just to be aware of everything that comes up, but don't attempt to control it. Mindfulness is very relaxing, and that's why, you know, the studies on mindfulness have a lot of, you know, hey, it has a big impact on stress. It does trigger the parasympathetic nervous system because you're calming your body down. If you're calming your body down, you're calming your brain down, because that's an organ. Mindfulness will drop you from gamma, beta into an alpha state. But it's not meditation, right? It's still kind of a precursor. It's preparatory training. Does that make sense? So I would put that into kind of the sensory awareness category. So, and then breath. So breath training calms our nervous system down. Concentration training allows our mind to focus on one thing. Mindfulness or sensory awareness training expands our awareness to be able to pay attention to all the little nuanced things that go around. So we actually expand our sense of, you know, our reach, both externally and internally. And now when we practice those three things, now we can get into meditation, where we can take that concentration and that awareness and start to narrow our focus and like deeply concentrate on something that we want to know more than before. You know, like we want to master a subject or a skill or ourselves. And of course, the yoga path was to master the self. But they do say that meditation has both what they call a bhukti and a mukti orientation. So there's internal mastery, and then there's external mastery, right? So that's why Kokoro Yoga say maximize your human potential, that's your inner potential, so that you can perform in life. Because the warrior path was both. We were not trying to back out of the world and just, you know, sit around together in a circle meditating. Warriors need to be in the world, like you, CEOs. We're in the world, we're conquering, we're doing good works, we're creating stuff that helps people. The warrior went into battle to serve his family, his tribe, his people. Yet you couldn't go into battle if you hadn't mastered yourself. And so the warrior learns to win in their mind through the yogic practices before they step foot on the battlefield. Self-mastery comes before service. Internal development comes before external performance.
What do you do in the way of visualization? You talk a lot about self-mastery, but mm-hmm. a lot of times people have a hard time visualizing self-mastery because you don't know what it looks like until you've achieved some degree of it, right? Well, sure. What's your visualization exercise? What do you teach in Kokoro Yoga?
Kokoro, we have a that's fine. We have a few. Visualization, I might add, is can be used for concentration and meditation, okay? And it can be a practice in and of itself, like a guided visualization is. It's kind of like a concentration practice. So, of course, we know through sports performance that visualization can be used to practice a skill. So I use that in that way. I'm currently using visualization for healing because I keep injuring a back muscle when I, again, back to CrossFit, when I try to snatch or clean and jerk too heavy, right? And all of a sudden, boom. So I've got some structural issue with my lower back related to an early, you know, childhood injury, spinal injury, which now is, keeps flaring up because I've exposed it with the lifting. So you can visualize energy flowing to that area in your body. And there's a saying that where your mind goes, where your awareness goes, energy flows, and it helps the healing process. So that's another way I use visualization. When it comes to performance of a, something that's not a skill, so it's like visualizing myself meeting my mission with Seal Fit and Unbeatable Mind, what I do is use my imagination to create a future image or viewpoint of what that success looks like. And so this helps to like write it down. It helps to kind of see what other people have done. So like finding mentors and seeing what their life looks like, what, you know, what's the potential, right? So, and to think much bigger than you believe, even at the time, is important, and to put it out far enough that you have a reasonable chance of achieving it. And then what you do is you come back and you re-engage this vision every day and you play it internally. And so what happens is that you get, you know, this vision gets stronger and clearer, and it feels more significant. Like it starts to feel heavier almost. And obviously you're not weighing it, but it's just you're easier to lock onto it. You're able to hold your attention longer because there's more energy wrapped in this vision every time you bring it up in your mind. And you add emotion and color, and you can watch it. You know, most people starts like a static image, and then slowly it becomes like a motion picture. A lot of people starts from a third-person perspective where you're watching yourself to then you merge with a first-person perspective. Those are all signs that you're getting better. You're getting closer to the mark. And I believe that this is like a magnetic force that just kind of inexorably draws you closer to it. But also by practicing this future state where you're, you know, you see yourself as this the person who's worthy, who's got the character and the relationships and the skills and the knowledge and the personality to accomplish this beautiful vision, you begin to develop an internal confidence. So it works, you know, on your nervous system and your subconscious to begin to have that vision become more believable and, you know, felt inside of you. So that would be like a long-term visualization where I say 20 years out, you know, Seal Fit and Unbeatable Mind, my companies have impacted, you know, 100 million people. What does that look like, feel like? I visualize it every day. Then there's the shorter term, and this is really the last way that I use it. This is more performance-oriented. Let's say I was going for the CrossFit Games, which is not going to happen probably ever again with my situation. But I for a while, a few years ago, I missed it by one in the Masters Division back in 2012 or 13. And I thought, I'm going to get this someday. But so I've removed that as a goal because my back injury keeps preventing me from doing it. But let's say that was a goal, and it was 6 months out or 9 months out. Now we have a very specific goal. Well, you know, this is classic sports performance too. You visualize yourself on that day accomplishing the goal, kicking ass and taking names, right? Mm-hmm. And then you practice that every day. This is like, you know, when I talk to sports teams, you know, we have the team have a collective vision of what victory looks like to them. It could be a championship, and then the team visualizes that, while each individual also visualizes them in their skills, improving their skills, but the team visualizes the win and practices winning in their mind. And then as you get closer and closer to that event, you know, your confidence starts to build because everyone's got a clear picture. You know, Navy SEALs do this when they go out on a mission, like the Bin Laden raid, I referenced that. I wasn't on it, but I had some good friends on their raid. They rehearsed their raid in an actual building that was a mock-up. They would walk through it. They would go, you know, at medium speed. They'd go at fast speed. They'd go with blanks, then simunition, then live rounds. And they would visualize it before walking through it. So they have a visual and then a walkthrough, and then they do a debrief where they go back again through what they did. And so hundreds of times of doing this have got such a solid mental representation as a team of what the team is looking like, what all the moving parts look like, where the critical nodes are that could fail. And, you know, of course, those always happen. And so when they happen, you immediately, you know, are able to execute the plan B or the plan C because you practice it in your mind, right, as a pre-rehearsal, right? Many times over. So visualization, I think, is super powerful for business executives to use. And I'm a big proponent of, I call it these four skills, which are like money when it comes to the performance side of Kokoro Yoga. One is breath control. That's why I teach the box breathing practice. We've talked about that before.
Oh, yeah.
And then the second is this notion of positivity. It's more than just happy talk, right? Positivity is this idea of kind of rewiring your entire mind-body system so that any negative that comes up, you can reframe it, right? This is really part of the stress management process we talked about earlier. Reframing, developing non-attachment to outcomes, developing the habit of a positive attitude in relation to other human beings, positive internal dialogue. So you know, your mind talk, your self-talk is always, you know, performance, and you don't defeat yourself. And then supporting that with a positive emotional state and being able to very quickly transmute emotions that are negative and maybe debilitating in the past into something more powerful, like a powerful correlate. So that's the second skill. The third is visualization. We just talked through that. And then the fourth is task orientation. Being able to focus on the right task at the right time for the right reason, and being able to laser focus on that task until you've reached completion, and then you move on to the next task. Something, of course, busy people who are oversaturated with tasks and commitments would benefit from practicing.
So your task is basically Snapchatting for 8 seconds every 2 minutes, and then you just talk.
Just keep doing it, you know, all day long.
It's interesting to talk about that level of focus and execution, but I find a lot of the CEOs I talk with, they don't necessarily prioritize their tasks very well. And honestly, if you're a CEO and you're spending all your day on Facebook, like, you have bigger issues. But
no doubt.
But there is this constant thing. You ask anyone of the kind of creative entrepreneur types, and they're like, oh yeah, I want to do that, and I want to do that, and I want to do that, and I want to do that. And the I want to do that's never stop. Right,
because that's
who they are. I mean, I'm like that. Like, there's, you know, only 4,000 products that I want to make that are bulletproof that will totally work. And I prioritize them. Like, just pick the top 2,000 and launch them tomorrow, and we're all good. And my team's like, Dave, you're a crackhead. So when we talk about sticking to a task like that, I mean, do you have any advice? I mean, you're running a company. You've been on very well planned and well executed missions. How do you deal with that? Okay, like, I have a lot of good ideas. But I want to stick to just one of them. How do you pick which one to stick with?
It's not easy, right? We always want to chase the next shiny thing, and I succumb to that sometimes as well. But I think it becomes a practice. The more you do the practices we've been talking about, the more patient you become. And so you can pause and now reflect and say, Is this yes, or am I just feeling a yes because of my old patterns? And so what I've started to do is say no or maybe all the time to give me some space to reflect upon it. Is this a real no, or do I really want to do this? But at least I haven't committed to it yet. And then 9 times out of 10, it ends up being a no. And that no, I learn, is in service to a bigger yes that comes along later. And I'm like, oh, thank God I didn't say yes to that, because this is what's meant to happen. I'm wiggling out of a book deal right now because I said yes when it was just not a good idea, but I was kind of in my ego mind. This is a year ago. And so I'm working on this mantra to say no to the bigger yes. And I recently read a book. You know, one of our principles in Unbeatable Mind Training is the KISS principle. Because the Navy SEALs are, keep it simple, Sally. Navy SEALs have to be very simple with the way we live our lives. You know, it's the warrior's way. We got to be able to live with a kit bag and be able to grab your bag and your weapon and go at a moment's notice. You may come back and find your house cleared out and your car gone, your bank account empty. I've seen that happen to a lot of my friends. And you got to show up at work the next day ready for the mission. And so you just become very unattached to physical objects, even unattached to your own brilliance and your own performance. But you just show up every day. My first martial arts master had this saying. It was, I love it, and it really represents what I'm talking about. It's one day, one lifetime. One day, one lifetime. All we got is today. What are we going to do today to move the dial toward our mission success? It can't be to work on 2,000 products. It can only be to work on one major initiative. Now, you might have a few subtasks that you've delegated out. Your team could be working on 10 things, hopefully not the same person, right? But we all got to be working on one main thing at a time. So part of the warrior's practice is to define what that one thing is. And, you know, other great thinkers have always nailed this, and it's one of the most important concepts. Stephen Covey used to say that your main thing is to keep your main thing the main thing. I love that.
It's a great quote.
Isn't that a great quote? So I have, in my book, The Way of the SEAL, I kind of came up with a process I called the target selection process, using a model that I developed that was based upon the Navy SEAL target selection model. So, you know, a mission, you go in like a mission like going after bin Laden, there might be a number of targets that have to be achieved along the way. And certainly, you know, bin Laden was a target amongst other targets to be selected from. And so the target selection process in the military is really elaborate, but it helps narrow down what the most high-value targets are. And then we just focus on those one at a time, right? Boom, boom, boom. As a unit, that is. So it's the same way. We have a target selection process that will help you determine whether the target you're looking at fits your personality skill sets and your company right now, because that's always evolving. The FITS is an acronym. Whether it's important, is it the most important target that's going to lead to the highest return on investment? And the T is the timing right? Because as you know, especially as an entrepreneur, sometimes you might have the best idea, but your timing is wrong. Right, and the market's just not ready for it, or you're not ready for it. I've experienced this, like where I'm way ahead of my team, and even though what I want to develop is a great idea and it fits me, and it's really important, the team doesn't have the skills. I'm missing some critical talent, blah blah blah, and I'm literally 9 months away from being able to execute on it because I've got to fill those gaps. So timing is critical, and then the S is it simple enough that you can communicate it effectively and get everyone wrapped around the vision, right? Because complexity kills in business and in life. So we want to keep things simple and really be able to radically focus on the right targets that are going to have the highest return on investment. And then the last thing I want to say on this subject, Dave, is this notion of decluttering. So I am relentless about decluttering my life. And it's freed me up to be able to train for 3 hours a day and to be able to do podcasts and to be able to write books and stuff.
It's
a process that you have to look at every day.
Are you reading that Marie Kondo book? Are you folding your socks and underwear in a special pattern and throwing away everything that doesn't bring you joy? No. Please don't tell me that.
I've never heard of that, no.
Oh, thank God.
No, I know there's a few we'll
talk
writers
about that in a minute
about
for
this.
Listeners.
Yeah. Okay. No, I'm mostly talking about decluttering commitments.
Oh, okay, good.
And people... Right, so I don't sit on any boards of directors. I don't go out to dinner socially very rarely, maybe once a month.
You do it when you want to, not because you're
obligated. Yeah, right. I don't watch TV. I try to spend every waking moment really focused on something that's going to either improve me, improve my team, improve my business, or improve the world. In order to do that, I had to really declutter from. I don't have any toys, you know, like boats or motorcycles. You know, I don't go out into the desert on the weekend to do ATVing. I mean, I try to spend time with my son. And if he says, well, let's go for a bike ride, that's what we do because that's quality time. But you know what I'm saying? So I'm not putting myself out there as a model. I fall down in this area quite a bit. I've just noticed that it's really important to constantly say no and to let go and get rid of commitments because we just take too much on in our world. And we get the sense that world's moving too fast. Like that's why you asked me, are you going to take up Snapchat? There's no way. No way. I don't want to add one more thing. You know, I'm sure it's brilliant.
It's funny. I hold things up to a lens like that, and I'll actually do Snapchat only if it's going to add value. Good. And if it's going to add more value than it costs me. And if I'm going to be able to reach out to a whole bunch of people, like if Snapchat's the way to talk to me when I was 19, if I could like go back 20 something years, 24, 25 years, and go, all right, if that was the way I could have reached me and made me go, oh my God, if I just do these three things, like I'm going to avoid all this pain. All right, then I'll do Snapchat all day long. Like I'm fine with it. That's part of my mission. But I did, in fact, I just had a meeting with five people on my team and reached out to two big Snapchat experts. I talked with Gary Vee and I talked with Benny Luo, who runs NextShark. So these are friends or people I've met. And I'm like, is it worth it? And that was my one question for my team, all the people from different ages who use Snapchat, just to determine whether I was really going to turn on my account. Because, yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to try it and see if it's adding value. But very similar thinking with you there, because for me, that's the most toxic thing. If I really had to do an 8-second video every 5 minutes to be useful, I'm never going to do that. But will I do a couple a day? Maybe. And it's an experiment.
Yeah, let me know how that goes.
I will. But the book I was talking about with tidying up or decluttering, Marie Kondo has been on the New York Times bestselling list for 80 weeks straight. Holy cow. She wrote a book called The Secret Japanese Art of Tidying Up.
Oh, my wife does have that, yeah.
See, my wife has it too, and I love Dr. Lana, but she took all of my blender, coffee maker, grinders, and put them under the counter. And as a functional human being, I don't care how magically tidy my kitchen counter looks if I can't make my goddamn bulletproof coffee in the morning. Like, there are limits, okay? All right.
I'm with you, yeah.
There's like a tension between functional and beautiful and calm. And there's got to be a tension there. So her other thing
is most people are either skewed toward OCD or ADD, right? Mm-hmm. We want to find the center point, I think, right? So we can kind of be balanced and not take these things too seriously. It's like we've talked about this before, but when it comes to nutrition, people say, hey, what's your formula for nutrition? Or think of like some elaborate formula that I have. And I say, well, I generally try to eat whole foods in the right proportion that my body desires 80% of the time. And then 20% of the time, I don't give a crap. I'll eat whatever, right? Because it's impossible to be perfect and it takes all the fun out of it. That's my course in nutrition right there. I tell you what, it's worked for me, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's definitely working. You're looking pretty good. Then again, this is something I didn't ask you on the last interview, and we get a chance to chat socially occasionally, which is kind of fun too, like without cameras and recorders and all that. But you're pretty much like a real life Superman. A lot of people think that, you know, you're a warrior, literally. I mean, you look kind of like Superman. You've got that V shape, and you know, you're just a successful guy in multiple fronts in your life. So if everyone thinks you're Superman, what's your biggest weakness? Like what's your kryptonite?
Oh, man. Well, people think I'm a total purist. I'm a total purist. And I'm not. You know what I mean? I love red wine and occasionally will overdo it. You know, so that's kryptonite for me. That's part of the SEAL culture, though, that, you know, I've just kept on. You know, it's kind of fun. I think... His buddy. My self-assessment is off right now. I'm Superman. I don't have any other weaknesses. Dave. Nice.
Oh, shut up, Dave. I'm using my laser vision on you now.
I'm going to stare you down now. I will come back at you. No, I don't know. Maybe it's taken me a while to believe that I have the capacity to do what I described to you a little while ago with my vision. Right, that's been a growing thing in me. Right, I didn't leave the SEALs in 2012, or actually, active duty was much earlier than that. But my first business was the brewing company, Coronado Brewing Company. You know, and that's about as far from what I'm doing today as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And so it's been, I would say, my own vision has needed to clarify for my own purpose to unfold in this world. And so that, I would think, was a weakness for a very long time, and it's one that I'm very cognizant of that requires daily practice. So I don't let down on that. That's why I'm so such an advocate for, you know, things like Kokoro Yoga, where you turn it into a daily practice. You habituate working the inner domain, because if you don't, it atrophies, just like your body. If you don't get to the gym 4 or 5 times a week, you know, and do the work, then, right, you're marking time. And as we get older, right, we're sliding backwards and then accelerating backwards. And I do believe that we can greatly stem the tide and really enhance the quality of our life and most likely our longevity by daily focus on physical, mental, emotional, intuitional, spiritual training. And that's what I'm all about in my own life, but also teaching that. So if there's a, I'm still trying to wrap my head around my kryptonite, but I guess my kryptonite is, I wish I had known this when I was 18 or 19, you know. I've done a lot more, but that's wishful thinking.
It is wishful thinking, but a lot of what motivates me is like, if someone would have just told me all this crap in a way I could have heard it when I was younger, my capacity to do what I do would have been 10 times what it is today. And it's already pretty good. Like, I'm doing all right. I'm helping a lot of people.
Right.
But I suffered so much and I did so many stupid things. And frankly, I hurt so many people because I just didn't know any better. Right. And so
I think about this a bit, Dave, is, you know, like, my son is 16. Now, he grew up with the internet and iPhones, and, you know, he grew up consuming content like this. I grew up with 3 channels on the TV and a cassette deck and an 8-track player in my car. I have a lot of hope. Like, when we met at Abundance, I love Peter Diamandis' message. I have a very abundant view of the future, even though we are in the most negative, seems like anyways, from my experience, most negative period in American history, from the media and politics and, you know, the large, you know, consumeristic just battle being played out between big pharma and medicine and government and bureaucrats. It's just really negative. And then what's going on in the world. But I'm very optimistic about the future because I see the next generation coming up and their brains are not like ours. Right? They've been stimulated in so many different ways. They're consuming content like freaking carnivores. And it's content that we've spent our entire lives to learn through experience. Yeah. Now they're soaking it up, and you know, a lot of it's hitting home, and they're going to be able to, I think they're going to change the world a lot faster than you and I ever will. So that's part of my mission also, is to really affect the younger set so they can, you know,
got to make sure the content is worthwhile. I did some math. Bulletproof Radio, and I think some of the other content, I just looked the number of downloads. It was like 32 million now. It's somewhere around 165 entire human lifetimes spent listening to Bulletproof Radio. I'm like, I'm kind of a mass murderer if I'm making content that's not worth time. Like that's actually a weight, right? And it's one I'm happy to carry, but it only gets bigger. And
congratulations.
I mean, I got it better. And I'm like, did I do something worthwhile today? Like, did I create content that right. did something? Because with those numbers, like, I don't want to play around. I don't want to do it wrong. Right?
It becomes a responsibility. Yeah. We just hit 1 million. So I got a little ways to go to catch up to you.
A million hours is 1 million hours. I mean, that is something that most media companies 10 years ago or 10, 20 years ago, they're dreaming about that kind of reach. Yeah. So it's a big responsibility, but you're well cut out for that. Absolutely.
Thanks.
All right. Well, I've already asked you your top 3 recommendations for being more bulletproof. And I asked you what I think is going to become my new question for second time guests, which is, you know, what's your biggest weakness?
That's a good one. Yeah.
I'll answer that too, because everyone's going to ask me that now. So I'm just going to answer it. When people do job interviews, it's like the dumbest question you can ever ask a candidate as an interviewer. So what's your biggest weakness? And I've been asked that at least 10 times in job interviews in my life. And my answer has always been the same. You know, sometimes I work too hard. Right? Because then the boss is like, yes, I want to hire this guy. And like, it's a dumb interview question. But actually that has been one of my biggest weaknesses historically. Like, I put too much into my career. And now that I've changed my, you know, career focus from you know, putting food on the table to like having more of a mission and to achieving good without the, you know, I need to have a job kind of perspective, and just moving from a survival to a thriving perspective. I think I've mostly resolved that problem, but that certainly has been a weakness for me historically. So, well, Mark, where can people find out more about Kokoro Yoga? Kokoro. God damn it.
Okay. That's 100 burpee penalty, Dave. The book website where you can learn about the book and also get a free chapter if you just want to take a look at the first chapter. It's called warrioryoga.com. Funny story there. I told you I was calling it Warrior Yoga for years, and so I contracted to write the book as Warrior Yoga. We were going to launch the program as Warrior Yoga. And right on the cusp of, you know, books entirely written, we're about to launch it. About a month before, I find out, because I was too dumb to do my research, that there's a trademark for Warrior Yoga.
Oops.
Some guy up in Santa Monica has a trademark for it. And he got it like in 2000, so it's not like a new thing.
Oh, wow.
It's not like he was trying to, you know, get the jump on me. He did get the jump on me by about 16 years. So anyways, I contacted him to see if there was a way to buy it or license it. He wasn't having anything to do with that. And so I had to change it. So we chose Kokoro because it's got deep meaning, but I'll have to brand the term because, you know, it's obviously hard to say. You know, it doesn't mean anything to people until they get connected with it. So it'll be a longer battle to brand it. But anyways, back to your question. I kept the domain. So warrioryoga.com, which would be great for SEO and stuff, is where you can learn about the book. And unbeatablemind.com is where all of the online training for Kokoro Yoga will be housed or hosted. And so you can learn more about my Unbeatable Mind Academy there, which is also a really cool online program. And then the Kokoro Yoga challenge is ending on the 24th of this month, and we'll be rolling out an online practice community for Kokoro Yoga. It's going to be really, really amazing. And then for folks who are a little bit more rugged and are looking for a serious challenge, then sealfit.com is where you can learn about sealfit training, the Kokoro Camp, which is our 50-hour crucible, the 20X team in sport. You know, we just did an event with Fresno State, which is a Division I football team, and we're going to do Alabama pretty soon. So we're starting to work with D1 and D2 college football teams and other sports and high schools and corporate teams. And so really, really powerful training that we do through SealFit.
Beautiful. Mark, thanks for being on the show. It's always a pleasure to get to hang out, whether we're recording a show or just hanging out. And I look forward to the next time we get to see each other.
Likewise, Dave. Thank you very much. Hoo-yah.
If you like today's show, you know what to do. Pick up a copy of Mark Divine's latest book. You'll find that there's neat stuff in there that's different than what you'd find in a normal book about yoga, because let's face it, most yoga, you should actually do yoga instead of read about it. There's enough in here that is worth your time and your energy to read. Have an awesome day. Leave us some good reviews on iTunes. And yeah, you can follow me on Snapchat at Dave Asprey, all run together. Have an awesome day. Thanks for watching. Get tons more original info to make it easier to kick more ass at life when you sign up with a free newsletter at bulletproofexec.com. Thanks for watching and stay bulletproof.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.